Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620kpoj.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And top of the Monday to you. Tom Hartman here with you. To my tip of the hat and greetings to my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson: when people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fears the people, you have liberty. Sounds good to me. Tim Geithner and Larry Summers getting a little nervous here. There's some serious talk about nationalizing the banks. It worked for Sweden. It worked with the SNLs. Bill Seaman did a great job with that. It seems to be working with Northern Rock and with Royal Bank of Scotland in the UK. Why shouldn't we do it here in the United States? I'll just leave that at that. I think it's a very important point. We'll get into more detail on this as the week goes on. But something, you know, the word nationalization has everybody freaked out, particularly all the conservatives are all quite hysterical. And one of the reasons why is because we already have something nationalized, and that's our insurance against disaster. It's called the Social Security Insurance Program. The actual act has gone through several name changes over the years, but originally the word insurance was part of the name back in 1935. I believe it may still be. And the Social Security, you know, fully a third of Social Security literally is insurance for disaster. People like my dear friend Michael Hutchison in Santa Fe, who was out running about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and in the snow, in the ice, tripped over a bridge, ended up in a river with a broken neck, and is living on Social Security, paralyzed from the neck down. And it's keeping him alive. It's keeping a lot of people alive. About a third of total Social Security payments are literally going to widows, orphans, and disabled people. A fine thing. And it's, of course, insurance against poverty in old age. So the thing that concerns me is that folks like Jerome Corsi are out there, and he actually solicited us to have him come on the program. Sorry, Jerome. Enough already. But, you know, this is the guy who brought us SWPO Veterans for Truth. Excuse me. And his Obama Nation book smears, you know, I wrote it on the Internet. It must be true about Obama. And here's the deal. The millionaires and billionaires who subsidize those kinds of books and who subsidize people like Corsi really don't want there to be a Social Security program. In particular, right now, they're starting to get very hysterical about it. And the reason why is because the taxes that pay for Social Security, the so-called payroll tax, are only paid by working people. They're only paid by people who make up to $100,000 a year. You make more than $100,000 a year, more or less, and you pay no Social Security taxes whatsoever on all your income past that first $100,000. None. Zero. Zip. Nada. Niet. And the millionaires and billionaires in America would very much like it to keep it that way. So they've got people like Corsi out there, their front men, the people, their paid shills out there, and they're scaring the hell out of Americans. I get this email from Jeff Brown, and I'm sure Jeff is a well-intentioned guy. He says, Tom, the reason why I email you is, honestly, I hope you see the error of your ways. I guess I feel like an evangelist sounding the alarm to you. With Medicare and Social Security, we already have $60 trillion in debt obligations. This is a bigger Ponzi scheme than Madoff. Social Security is a Ponzi with trillions of dollars. Please see that Medicare and Social Security put us in a hole already in terms of debt obligations. We need to cut the entitlements. The people of your ilk will never do such a thing because it's uncompassionate. You applaud bigger FDR-type programs. And then he has a link to Corsi's piece over at WorldNetDaily.com. He says, I seriously hope, Tom, that you realize we need to cut all these things from our budget, these little FDR programs that started, if you're going to have a strong dollar. Otherwise, we'll become like Argentina or the UK. Actually, the problem that Argentina and the UK have is that they started to cut their social safety nets. The UK started going down the tubes when Margaret Thatcher came in and started cutting out the social safety net programs. That is what has put them into a crisis. The problem that Chile, I'm assuming he's thinking of Chile, not Argentina. Argentina's had some serious problems, too. Their biggest problem had to do with growing with the World Bank, with debt from the World Bank. Chile, the World Bank, you know, the same thing. The World Bank came in and said, you have to privatize your Social Security program, which, by the way, is what Corsi's advocating. What did it do? It wiped out people's Social Security. Wiped it out. Why? Because the bankers came in and they skimmed their piece off the top. It's just like private health insurance. Anyhow, Jeff goes on to say, can't you just do the math and drop your fantasy that we can even afford universal health care? Then why do you push another debt onto an already bankrupt United States? So we go to Corsi's piece. And he says, the American public is largely unaware that the true deficit of the federal government already is measured in trillions of dollars. In fact, it's $65.5 trillion in total obligations and exceeds the gross domestic product of the world. All right. If your debt obligations are calculated as all the money that you're ever going to have to pay out in the future, and you compare that with all the money that you happen to have right now, of course he's right. But that's sort of like saying that, you know, the average, the median income in the United States is around $50,000, right? I think it's $46,000 and change, $45,000 and change. Let's say it's around $50,000 a year, and the average person works about 40 years. So that's $2 million. So the average working person in America earns through the course of their lifetime about $2 million. They also spend about $2 million because the average working person spends everything they earn. So that's like saying somebody who just came into the workplace is $2 million in debt because over the course of the 40 years that they work, they're going to spend $2 million. And they only have $50,000 in income. So they're broke. They should be freaking out. They should be running around with their hair on fire. Do you get how stupid that logic is? It's like saying, you know, it costs about $250,000 in America right now to raise a kid. On average, when you figure child care costs, clothing, food, transportation, you know, this is not even including putting them through college. Just the cost of taking a kid from 0 to 18. It's about $250,000. So that's like saying every time a child is born, that family all of a sudden has $250,000 in debt. And they should freak out and run around screaming, pulling their hair out, and put their child up for adoption. Get rid of the kid. Because after all, they don't have that $250,000. Well, the fact of the matter is, over the course of the 18 years of that child's, you know, until they go off, until they're legally an adult, people are going to earn that money. That income's going to come in. So that's $65 trillion, of course, he's talking about. Yeah, of course, there's an obligation out there. We've said to people, we're going to cover you when you're retired. We've also said, we're going to charge taxes to pay for it. And in fact, Social Security will not face any sort of crisis whatsoever for at least 20 years. Everything is fine, thank you very much. And when it does, it will be easily solved by simply saying that anybody earning over $100,000 should pay the exact same, you know, flat tax, the exact same level of taxation on Social Security as people making under $100,000. This isn't rocket science. But see, Corsi is shilling and fronting for the millionaires and billionaires who are paying his salaries, the people who go out and buy 40, 50,000 copies of his Swift Boat book as soon as it hits, so that it hits the New York Times list, so that all of a sudden he can get publicity as a New York Times best-selling author. The same shell game, the same scam that they do with all the conservative books. It's the only reason that Ann Coulter, it's the only reason that Jerome Corsi, it's the only reason any of these guys have their books on the New York Times bestseller list. You get these so-called foundations, these right-wing so-called think tanks. They go out and buy millions and millions, or not millions, they go out and buy hundreds of thousands of these books, to even tens of thousands is typically, if they do them right, if they do it strategically, is enough to get them on the New York Times bestseller list. Then they're stuck with the books that they've paid for. So what they do is they go to websites like WorldNet Daily and others, and they give them away for free if you sign up. Or they give them away with magazine subscriptions. I mean, they figure out ways to recycle them, basically. But all it is basically it's billionaire and millionaire right-wingers buying the allegiance of the people who are talking to the average American to scare the hell out of them. There's no reason to be scared. This is a problem that is relatively easily solved. Now, as to health insurance, national health care, you say, Jeff says, well, we can't afford national health care. We're already paying for it, Jeff. We're already paying for it. The problem is if somebody gets sick and goes into an emergency room, you're paying $600 for something that should have cost $35. And by the way, if they have a chronic condition, if they need insulin, if they need heart medication, they show up at the emergency room, they're not going to get it. ERs are not designed for maintenance for that kind of thing. So if they've got no health insurance, they really are out in the cold. But the problem isn't that. The problem, I mean, that is a problem. The problem is that hundreds of billions of dollars a year are skimmed off the top, arguably trillions, from our healthcare system by health insurance companies that frankly have no right to exist. That's the problem. Get them out of the way. It's easily solved.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
The most progressive 3 hours of local radio you'll hear all day.
Elliott's Hardware has appealed to former President George W. Bush to spend his newfound retirement working as a part-time greeter.
We guarantee it.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Can you tell me where the rakes are?
Weekday 6 to 9.
I'm disappointed. There are no rakes. It's not an error that the store has no rakes, but we are disappointed.
Carl Wilson and friends. Weekdays 6 to 9. AM 620 KPOJ.
Hey, Tom Hartman here to talk to you about Hawthorne Fish House's new $5.95 cash lunch menu. Choose from six delicious combos like fried cod or chicken strips with fries and coleslaw, or warm up with a bowl of chowder and a salad. Combos also include your choice of soda, lemonade, tea, coffee, or juice, all for just $5.95. What are you waiting for? Offer valid weekdays between 11 to 3 only at Hawthorne Fish House when paying with cash. And be sure to check out their gluten-free menu available at both Hawthorne Fish House Southeast and Corbett Fish House Southwest.
Hey, thought you were making breakfast.
I am, with McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
How is that making breakfast?
I'm mixing and matching, you know, putting breakfast together.
We're on a budget.
They're a dollar each. You know, I can't bake warm biscuits or sizzle sausage for that.
True.
I can't put real fruit in yogurt or make crispy hash browns for a buck.
You're so right.
Make your own morning and choose from six wallet-friendly favorites on McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
This was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I do have my moments.
Breakfast served during breakfast hours only.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
These days, your budget's really feeling the heat. But Family Fun doesn't have to cost much at all when you make it by the pitcherful with Kool-Aid. For the price of one bottle of soda, you can mix up five big pitchers of Kool-Aid. And for pennies a glass, keep the whole family refreshed and smiling. At that price, maybe the whole neighborhood. Kool-Aid instead of soda. As always, delivering more smiles per gallon.
TurboTax presents a message from Benjamin Franklin.
Ben here, you know, from the $100 bill, and I want you to get more of me back on your taxes. Just use TurboTax. It has a feature called It's Deductible, which gives you the full resale value on your charitable donations for a bigger deduction. So it's easy to get the maximum refund you're entitled to. And by maximum refund, I mean me, with a posse.
TurboTax. Choose easy. Get the federal free edition at TurboTax.com. It's deductible included in Deluxe, Premier, and Home and Business.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
You tell him, Tracy. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 21 minutes past the hour. Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. You can find out more information at their website at teamster.org. This is a comment posted on our message board over at tomhartman.com. Sometime on Thursday or Friday, you said, let's see, who posted this? Patty, P-A-D-D-Y. You said you would like to see the Reagan tax cuts repealed. Do you really want the marginal tax rates to return to 70%? That's what they were in the 1970s. Add to that state income tax, property tax, sales tax, the person could be paying over 80% of his income in taxes. Not much of an incentive to work, innovate, and take risks. If you will remember, the period between 1966 and 1982 saw the stock market go nowhere, inflation reached 12%, and unemployment was high throughout that period. That is the classic right-wing talking point, and it is almost all wrong. First of all, yes, I want to see the Reagan tax cuts repealed. And here's the kicker word, and I'm surprised, you know, I'm guessing that this person, whoever posted this, actually is a right-wing shill because they're using the correct language, but they're using it in a way that the average person doesn't understand. They say, do you really want to see the marginal tax rates return to 70%? Well, but that word marginal is the critical word. It doesn't mean the overall tax rate. It doesn't mean that if you earn $50,000 a year, you're going to pay 70% tax. You're not. If you earn $50,000 a year, you're going to pay probably less than you are now, because people earning over $3 million a year are going to pay more than they are now. Because it's the marginal rates, the rates at the margin, the rates at the fringe, the rates at the very, very top that are going to go up. The rates on the top 0.1% of Americans. That income tax rate goes up. Now, the argument that is made for why, see, again, everything stays the same unless you're making over $3 million bucks a year. If you're making over $3 million bucks a year, yep, your income tax rate goes to 70%. And yep, you may not have an incentive to work that much harder or that much more, innovate that much more. But you tell me, do you really think anybody making over $3 million a year needs an incentive to innovate more? First of all, what I've found in all my years in business, and they've been considerable, for better or for worse, is that people work because they love their work. You know, I started a number of companies over the years, and typically the first couple of years of running the business, I made nothing, zero. And then, you know, down the road, you sell the business, or in the last couple of years that I owned them, I made a lot. I was in that top 0.1% on a couple of occasions. And it made no difference. I was working because I loved what I was doing. I loved building the business. And when you cash out, you cash out, if you do. Or if you're making $3.2 million, what's wrong with saying as a nation, you know, $3 million bucks a year, that's enough. Somebody can't live on that. They got a problem. And no, you know, we really don't want somebody having an incentive to earn more than that. We'd rather have a whole bunch of people have an incentive to earn $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 a year and provide room for that by capping taxes at $3.2 million a year. We were doing just fine, thank you very much, back in the golden age of the American middle class. Now, this person is dissing the period from the 60s through the 70s. Let's see, the period from 66 to 82. Well, first of all, very selective, because 82 was the year that the stock market crashed under Reagan. And 66, you know, not such a great year. But if you take the period from 1960, take the period from 1950 to 2000, and just look at each decade, what you find is that the decade of the 80s, the Reagan decade, had the slowest growth of any of those four decades. The decades of this, and by the way, the middle class lost the most, particularly after that tax cut on the top marginal rate. And the decade of the 90s, the middle class lost out terribly. The middle class went in the tank in the decade of the 90s. So rather than selectively picking years, 66 through 82, let's just look at all these decades. In the 50s, you had spectacular growth of the middle class, and you had a top marginal tax rate of 91% in the 50s. In the 60s, you had a top marginal tax rate through 64 of 91%. In 64, it dropped down to 74%. In the 70s did fairly well. If you look at the entire decade, if you don't just take the last couple of years when the bill came due for Vietnam, the 70s, growth, the growth of GDP, job growth, the whole thing. Any way you look at it, you take the entire decade of the 70s and compare it to the entire decade of the 80s, which was almost entirely Reagan, the 70s was better. The 80s was the bad decade. Between Reagan's crash in 82 and the stock market crash in 87, you had some pretty, and that's, of course, why this guy is cutting off at 82, you had some pretty bad years. The decade of the 80s was really rough on Americans. The 90s did a whole lot better under Bill Clinton. We were back more or less to the kind of job growth that we saw in the 50s and 60s and 70s. The first decade of 2000 under George W. Bush was just as bad as that under Reagan. There's, as Paul Krugman pointed out, there's basically been no wealth created since George Bush became president. Now, hopefully that'll change. We have a Democrat in the White House again. Go back and look over the last 200 years. What you see, or the last 150 years anyway, what you see is when Democrats are in the White House and they control Congress, the economy grows, jobs grow, the middle class grows. When Republicans control the show, the rich grow, everybody else gets screwed. It's really very simple.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yee-haw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620, KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman, Nationwide, on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620, KPOJ.
I think I said something like it's time I go, and I give her one last kiss, and that's all I know. It's all I know for sure. Now it's in the songs I sing, it's the price I pay. There's no such thing as a clean getaway.
You listening, George? Are you listening, George?
Roots started growing beneath my feet.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, and sometimes could be. I mean, sometimes I think it's just gone over the top. You know, one of the 9/11 widows who was most active in the 9/11 movement died in this plane crash over the weekend. This is what Glenn Beck had to say about her and her compatriots just a few years ago.
You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. It took me about a year. And I had such compassion for them, and I really, you know, I wanted to help them, and I was behind, you know, let's give them money, let's get started, you know, all of this stuff. And I really didn't, you know, all the 3,000 victims' families, I don't hate all of them. I hate about probably about 10 of them. But when I see, you know, 9/11 victim family, you know, on television or whatever, I'm just like, oh, shut up. I'm so sick of them because they're always complaining. And we did our best for them. And it, again, it's only about 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, only about 10. And, you know, one of those 10 died in the tragic airplane crash, Beverly Eckert, 9/11 widow. She was the one who pushed for the 9/11 commission. She was the one who was demanding answers from the government. She was the one who has helped win passage of the intelligence reform law. As Beck said, praising her on his show, what, last Friday, I guess it was. But a little, you know, a little late, Glenn. She won't hear you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Will in California. Hey, Will, what's on your mind today?
Truth teller, how you doing, sir?
Just fine.
I wanted to ask you real quick if you could tell me. I believe Wednesday we're going to find out whether or not we're due for change or not on Bush paying for the crimes. And
are you talking about Karl Rove's subpoena?
Yeah.
Yeah, we hopefully hopefully we will find out on Wednesday. Yeah, and that is an ongoing story that that we will be tracking down. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, by the way. And Mike in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Well, a couple of things, Tom. But first, I want to thank you for being one of the few rational voices in the wilderness of talk radio.
Well, thank you for your kind words, Mike.
Yeah, well, I'm done with the brown nosing now.
Thank you. It is not necessary, by the way. People can simply launch into their topics. So what's up?
I also want to lobby for some better coverage down here in Atlanta. I've gotten onto the satellite radio, and we only get an hour of your program.
Yeah.
And I understand that it goes on for 3 hours. I don't expect you to get on a local station because they're all owned by conservatives down here, but perhaps we could get you on for 3 hours on
well,
the
Well, you never know what's going to happen, Mike. But that's hopefully you called about an actual topic.
I did.
Okay. Get to it.
Regarding average and median income, and I mentioned this to your screener, of course, the you came up with the $45,000-$46,000 figure
right. For
household income.
Yeah.
That is a presumption that there's two contributing incomes to that figure. And if you divide that in half, then the average, or what I should say, the median income for a working American is in the neighborhood of $22,000 to $25,000. But we always hear this mixed up, and your average listener will think, well, why aren't I making $45,000?
Yeah.
When in fact he is making the average or the median.
Yeah. That's actually median worker income in the United States. The median family income in the United States is. I'm going to have to check my numbers here because I'm going to get into this in the next hour, but I think it's around $75,000. It has gone up, but it's gone up because of two-worker families. There's a whole another piece that goes along with that. But the fact of the matter is that average individual worker income, and this is particularly the case for males, for white and for African-American males and Hispanic males for that matter, has dropped over the last 28 years. It's dropped by about $4,000 a year.
Well, yes. Well, with the if you factor in inflation and
I'm talking about after inflation, in inflation-adjusted dollars, it's dropped about $4,000 a year.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the small joke. You know, when Bill Gates walks into a bar, everybody becomes a millionaire on average.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's part of the problem with some of these numbers. As I said, in the second hour, Carrie Lucas is going to drop by and try and tell us that, you know, feminism has led to women in the workplace. And my point is, no, women are in the workplace because we've had a 28-year sustained war on the middle class, and women are in the workplace because in many cases they simply have no choice if they want their family to maintain a decent standard of living. So we'll get into that, Mike. Stick around for it. Dan, and thanks for the call. Dan in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm curious to know if anybody out there is considering where the bulk of this, the money in our stimulus package is actually going to end up. Considering we buy almost all of our products from China and out of the country, And considering our trade imbalance, the imbalance in our trade and tariff laws, I'm just really, really curious as to if this is going to do any good.
Well, the extent to which we build roads with some American-built, you know, caterpillars and things, although there is a significant inroad into, you know, construction equipment coming from Japan. But the extent to which we're doing construction with American raw materials and American machinery and American work, American labor, and the extent to which we're putting money into things like teachers and hospitals and higher education, those things will stimulate the economy, the American economy, with Americans. The extent to which we have tax cuts, even middle-class tax cuts, and those tax cuts cause people to go out and spend an extra $40 at Walmart, you're right. Other than the little bit that is skimmed off the top to add to the billions of the Walmart billionaires, you know, the heirs of Sam Walton's family, most of that money will end up in China. I'm reading a brilliant book right now called The Jaws of the Dragon. I want to make it my BuzzFlash Book of the Month next month. I'm only halfway through the first chapter, and already my mind is completely blown. I will be sharing more about that with you as we go on through the week. But you're absolutely right. The stimulus, and this is one of the problems with the stimulus, and thanks for bringing it up, Dan. This is one of the problems with the stimulus bill, is that in many ways it is not targeted for America, and that's why the Buy American provision in it was so important. Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Linda, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi, Tom. I want to say, for 40 years, the Republicans have been able to leverage their, I'm going to call them bull patties, into power, and they've not had to pay the consequences of that. It's time now to turn their no votes into no power, no votes in Congress into no votes at the ballot box.
Yeah.
And as I was waiting here, I thought, the Republicans have used the appropriations process to destroy our cities, especially in the north,
yep.
and to build up, for example, Toyota and Nissan in the southern states with taxpayer money.
Yep.
So maybe this is the source of the Republican hysteria and histrionics. We'll fund different things in our appropriations process, like public transit and education.
Yes, absolutely. It very much is, Linda. And they're also betting that the stimulus package is not going to be enough and it's not going to work, and therefore they can claim credit for having been right, you know, when the 2010 elections come along. Go ahead.
But the only way they can do that is if we let them get away with it.
I agree. And I don't think Obama's going to let them get away with it. And
with two senators, Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, Nebraska, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Wyoming, should get no money. And
right.
where one Republican senator voted against it, the Republicans in that state should get no help. The House districts where Republicans voted against it should get no help. They have to be accountable for their actions, and the only way is if their people suffer because of it.
Well, I don't think any of us are in favor of people suffering, Linda, just because they happen to live in a district that voted Republican. There are a lot of good Democrats who live in those districts, too, and
B. They have to get active. They have to change their leadership.
You know, I agree.
They're not going to. If the Republicans get to stonewall against everything that we do,
sometimes,
they still get the benefit of
I get it, and point well made. But sometimes the best success, the best revenge is success. And if this program is successful, even moderately successful, and I think it will be, and I think that, frankly, there's more to come. There's much more to come. I think that success is going to cause people in those districts to say, you know, the Republicans really were the obstructionists. They really did destroy this country over the last 30 years, and they really do need to be held accountable. And the election of 2010 is going to be a complete and final death knell for Reaganism, Thatcherism, neoconism, Reaganomics, Lafflernomics, supply-side-nomics, Grover Norquist, the whole bunch of them. It's going to be a complete repudiation of them. I've been also considering Harry Reid. You know, I've been ragging on Harry Reid a lot lately for not having the testosterone to call these guys on a filibuster. But I'm wondering if maybe he's playing a very elegant game of judo, because by setting up a situation where he had, three Republicans going against their own party, which highlights how the rest of their party is the party of no. He actually, you know, did get, by and large, the legislation passed that they wanted. And his powder is still dry. I mean, if he wants to pull the nuclear option, if he wants to force a filibuster, he still has the option of doing that. I'm not sure. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. And if you can't get through on the phone lines because they're usually full, feel free to post a blog over at TomHartmann.com.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartmann Program.
What would Hartmann do? Tom Hartmann, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Tom Hartmann here. Hey, guys, do you know the symptoms of an enlarged prostate? Like it or not, you probably will, because eventually it's going to happen to most of us as we get older. If you're urinating more frequently, especially if you're waking up two, maybe three times a night to go to the bathroom, that's the first sign. Second sign might be burning, pain, or even problems in the bedroom. This is not just an old man's concern. It happens to American men more often than in other countries and can occur as young as 30. So don't ignore the symptoms. Get checkups from your doctor and order your risk-free bottle of Beta Prostate to support healthy prostate functioning. Every man should take Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate will help keep your prostate healthy, and it's a natural alternative. You don't need a prescription for it. Call now and order Beta Prostate risk-free. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Don't put this call off till tomorrow. Call today, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Ed Schultz.
So I end up with a front row seat in the first primetime press conference.
Noon to 3.
Folks, change is in the air. The Huffington Post was able to ask a question last night to the President of the United States. Helen Thomas is back on the lineup. Big Eddie in the front row. And I tell you what, it all goes to show that
the Ed Schultz Show,
this administration is listening outside the mainstream media.
Noon to 3.
I have earned that seat, and it's probably going to happen again.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Want to know something cool about Geico and renter's insurance?
Do I?
Okay, well, let's say you buy some presents, but they get stolen.
Oh, mercy me.
Let me finish. Well, Geico can help with that, even if they're stolen from your car or right out of your hands.
My word.
Not done yet. And coverage is as little as $12 a month.
Mwah!
You just kissed me.
I get excited.
Yeah, maybe a little.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
If you need dental work, but you just can't bring yourself to go, Dr. Floyd Cash can relate. As a child, he had a bad experience at the dentist and didn't want to go back.
I was worried about going a whole week ahead of time, and I couldn't sleep the night before, and the more I went, the worse it got.
Dr. Cash runs Sleep Dentistry of Portland, dedicated to helping people who have trouble going to the dentist. From oral sedation to IV sedation or even general anesthesia, Sleep Dentistry of Portland offers the dental work you need in a gentle, non-judgmental atmosphere.
That's what I've been doing since the first day I opened. I've tried to be the gentle dentist, mainly because I knew what had bothered me, so I was trying not to create that in anybody else.
Your introductory appointment is just a dollar, including full examination, any necessary x-rays, and consultation. Get the details at sleepdentistryofportland.com or call 503-405-7686. Sleep Dentistry of Portland.
Just because the sun came out for a peek doesn't mean the show's over, folks. That's right. Just when you thought he'd walk off the stage, he's back for an encore performance. It's that ice-cold crank daddy himself, Old Man Winter. And he's going to send chills down your spine with his latest hit, Not Even Brakes Can Slow Me Down. That is, unless you're driving one of those road-hugging, symmetrical, all-wheel drive Subarus from Car Subaru. They're staying on top of winter like an extra pair of snowshoes. And right now, you can get into an Impreza 2.5i for just $16,580. That's right, take over 2009 fully loaded Impreza 2.5i 9JA for just $16,580 at Car Subaru. So unless you enjoy hits like I'm Sliding For You, get to Car Subaru Northwest with more Subarus than winter has icicles. Car Subaru, off Highway 217 on Canyon Road in Beaverton, where salaried salespeople see it your way. Oh! Impreza 2.5i sedan, model 9JA, MSRP 18190, VIN 503368.
Now more of Tom Hartmann nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Everything that
sort of the story of the middle class in America. By the way, my stats were wrong just a minute ago. I was talking about two wage earner incomes are up 75% over what they were a generation ago. But the median income, the caller was right. The median income in the United States is between $46,000 and $47,000 a year. It varies from state to state, of course. But what we're going to get into in the second hour is not median, but rather two wage earner families. And I, doing my homework for that, I have all these statistics and all this information. And I want to get into that at some length in the next hour because it is a symptom of the crashing middle class and how that crashing middle class may even crash American democracy, which concerns me, frankly. Now, this alert, if you have an iPhone or one of those iPod touches, there is a new little software program, a little application that helps you count cards if you're playing blackjack. Warning. You might be able to pull it off in the local, in the garage down the street with the guys, and maybe I can pull it off with my little blackjack game on my computer. But you try doing it in Las Vegas, they will put you in jail. It is a felony. So just a tip. Paul in Washington D.C. Hey Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. First time, long time.
Thank you. I was calling
because I'm calling from D.C. We no longer have Progressive Talk Radio as of last week.
Yeah.
Formally. My question is, you mentioned flat tax as it relates to Social Security. And I always thought you said the flat tax doesn't work.
I'm opposed to a flat tax because it's not a progressive tax. But the fact of the matter is that we have not even a complete flat tax in Social Security. Everybody pays the same amount from $1 till $100,000, and after $100,000, they pay zero. So, at the very least, let's make Social Security a flat tax. And even though I'm opposed to flat taxes, I'd much rather see Social Security a progressive tax, where the more you make, the more you pay on it. But at the very least, make it a flat tax. Excuse me. Make sense?
That makes sense. I appreciate you clarifying that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, this is, I don't think most people realize, I didn't know this until I actually hit an income bracket. It was somewhere in the, I think it was in the late 70s, in 77, 78, we had an ad agency and an herbal tea company back in Michigan. And I had a CPA, and I remember him, laying out my taxes for me that year. And he said, and you're going to get a big tax refund on all the FICA that you paid. On all the Social Security that you paid. And I'm like, why is that? And he said, because you made more than whatever it was. I think back then it was like, $55,000 that was the cap. And then after that, you paid no Social Security tax. And I'd made, as I recall, $100,000 to $150,000 that year, something like that. And it was well over the FICA tax. And he said, we automatically deducted this every week from your paycheck. And now the government is going to give you this giant refund. And I'm like, wait a minute. So the richer I get, the less tax I pay? And he's like, right. And like my accountant is like, isn't it cool? And I guess at that, thinking back in that moment, I was thinking, yeah, this is kind of cool. But looking at it in retrospect, I'm thinking, no, that's not so cool. Even though right now I'm at an income bracket where I'm not paying FICA on some of my income. And I think it's wrong. I think I should pay FICA on all of my income, frankly. And everybody else should. Curtis in Abiquiu, New Mexico. Hey, Curtis, what's up?
Hey, it's Chris, actually.
Chris.
Tell me if you agree with this statement. One of the bedrock requirements of bipartisanship is that both sides have to be working at least roughly toward the same result.
Yeah. And they're not. The Republicans are working to destroy Social Security, to destroy social programs, to continue to inflate the national debt so that there will be no option in the future for national health care, things like that. You're right.
Yeah, the president is moving for a vibrant working middle class, and the Republicans are working for Oliver Twist.
Yeah, they want a two-class system instead of a three-class system.
So bipartisanship, if you put out your hand to someone who's moving in a different direction from you, you're both just going to stop dead.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent point. A metaphor would be cars going in opposite directions on a street. How can they both end up at the same stop sign? It ain't going to happen. We're at the same destination.
Take care, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Well said. Scott in Houston, Texas. Hey, Scott.
Great to talk to you, as always.
Thank you. What's up?
Hey, your last few callers ago, somebody had mentioned about rebuilding the infrastructure in the country. And, you know, I agree. I'm originally from Philadelphia, been down here in Houston, Texas for the last 20-some-odd years. You know, since Bush came into the office, I can't tell the amount of money that's flowed into this state for the infrastructure. All our roads, all our bridges. I was telling your screener that the main road through town from Florida to California is I-10.
Mm-hmm.
They literally expanded the road. They took up the whole road. They made it 24 lanes.
Whoa.
Now picture this, 24 lanes through the middle of any major American city. The cost was in the billions. It was supposed to be like $700 million. Last I heard, it was way over $2
billion. Yeah.
I mean, the money they've spent down here, while the rest of the country's been dying, you know, with bridges falling apart, you can go, I can only talk to the three big cities, San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston. Everything is new. All our roads are new, the sewer systems, the stormwater systems, the bayous.
Yeah.
I mean, they have literally pillaged the national treasury to rebuild this state.
Well, I can tell you that's very much not the case in Michigan, where I grew up, and I get back there two or three times a year because all my family's still there. You know, it's not the case in the blue states or the purple states in the industrial Midwest. It's not the case in Vermont, where I lived for 10 years. It's not the case here in Oregon. It's Bush and his buddies and his cronies.
Absolutely. It's time. I've been telling my relatives and friends back on the East Coast for years. I mean, they've been plundering. Even when you look at, like, the military-based closures, they were closing everything in California and the East Coast. The small amount of bases they closed in the South here was misleading. They closed them, but only so they could build new ones that were twice as big as the old ones.
Jeez. Scott, thanks for the tip and for the information. Why am I not surprised, right? I mean, it's a well-known fact that the red states, for every dollar that they send to the federal government, they get more than a dollar back, and the blue states, by and large, get less than a dollar back. We need to change that, too.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620kpoj.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Kerry Lucas is on the line with us from the People's Republic of Austria. She's the Vice President of Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. Hey, Kerry, how's it going in the socialist paradise? Kerry? I'm not hearing Kerry Lucas. Try to flip her over to the other side of the board there, Stephanie, and see if that works. Kerry?
Yes.
Hey, I hear
Tom.
You now. So how's it going?
Okay, fantastic.
Good. You have an op-ed over at the IWF.org at the Independent Women's Forum about how the number of women in the workplace has increased. In fact, in some areas, it's surpassed that of men in the workforce. And you say this is not a good thing, largely a result of the bad economy and men being laid off. But it is a noteworthy achievement. Riff on that for a moment.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that there is something. It's actually an interesting moment in U.S. history if women are truly going to become a majority of American workers for the first time, then that's kind of notable. But you know, I think it's one of those times where it's helpful to take a step back and it kind of shows us how little some of these number games mean, because if this is a result of men losing jobs, then that's not any good for anybody. It's not good for women, who are many of whom are having to increase their work to make up for a husband's lost income, and it's certainly not good for the men themselves, and it's not good for our economy. So while it's kind of an interesting time and a statistic that's worth noting, it doesn't really say anything about women's progress in our country. country.
Yeah, I agree. You suggest that the reason why there are so many women in the workplace, if I'm interpreting your piece right, and correct me if I'm wrong, has to do with the feminist movement. Do I have that right?
You know, I think that, I think there's a lot of reason why women are in the workforce. The feminists certainly were contributors to that and in helping women understand, in a positive way, and helping women understand all the opportunities that are available to them. But you know, today I think there's a lot of women working because they feel like that's the only way to make ends meet.
Yeah, and that's the point that I wanted to make. I would say that there has been a 28-year war, ever since Ronald Reagan was elected, a war on the middle class, that there is a conservative attempt to destroy the middle class and turn us from a three-class society into a two-class society, because the middle class tends to be so pesky and so problematic. You know, in the 60s, people protesting, in the 70s, you know, women burning bras and whatnot. And if you look at the statistics, what has happened is before Reagan came into office, the average family with a single wage earner, the average family had 50% of their income as discretionary income. They could use it for buying clothes, for buying food, for buying vacations and things like that. Today, the average family with two wage earners, the average two-wage earner family has only 25% of their income as discretionary income, and therefore, if either one of those people loses their income, they're wiped out. It used to be with a single-wage earner, if say dad was working and mom was at home, if dad lost his job or if dad got disabled, mom could go to work and you know they could cut back in some areas and the family would survive. Now, if one of those members of the family loses their job, the family loses the ability to stay in the middle class, and this is a major disaster for American workers.
Yeah, you know, and I agree with you to some point. One, there's actually a couple of interesting female economists. I believe one was from Harvard, who wrote
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, exactly. You're right there. And but one of the main things that they cite as a problem is the role that schools, that location-based schooling has played on, particular with families with children. And this is actually interesting. Kind of, they wrote this before the housing crisis, mm-hmm. but that the bidding wars to get into quote unquote the few good public schools that are out there have created a tremendous pressure. People were taking on mortgages and really stretching themselves. Sometimes both parents felt like they had to work in order to keep a home in the in that good school district.
Right. But Carrie, you're making my argument. I mean, her point, Elizabeth Warren's point, for example, in the research that she did for Harvard, she points out University City. This is a West Philadelphia neighborhood where the University of Pennsylvania said that they were going to build an elementary school for the community. And the result was that in 1998, the median home value was $60,000. They built this local public school, a high-quality local public school. Homes went up to $200,000. Now, that was far and above beyond what the housing bubble did. That was because there was a good school there. That a school, a good public school, a public school that has 4 or 5 points improved performance over an average public school, will raise median house values by anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000, and you know, which is substantial. And that the problem that we have in America, the reason why it's so critical, is because we have so badly underfunded our schools over the last 28 years. They're falling apart. There's been no construction.
Oh, Tom, we were so
schools.
Close.
I'm saying it's through
here, because this is, you know, I think what Elizabeth Warren, what her conclusion comes to is said, this is the problem with location-based schooling. We should not be assigning children to schools based on their zip code. We need school choice. And so I thought that we were going to have a moment here where you might come out for vouchers with me. But
her point was public schools, Carrie. Her research does not show that private schools in the area will increase housing values. Public schools in the area will increase housing values. That's got nothing to do with vouchers.
Okay, well, but then let's have public school choice. Let's have more charter schools. Let's stop
Well, I'm not opposed to that.
Component here. Okay, well, then let's you need to get your the rest of your folks on board, because
we don't need vouchers for that. All you need to be able to say is, you know, people can send their kids to any public school they want for free. Isn't that a reasonable compromise?
Well,
let's fund the public schools.
The public schools problem, I don't think that when we look at what's wrong with the public schools, it's not a lack of money. We've had the money that has gone into the public schools has been, as we know, as you can see on the charts, it's gone up when you hold constant for the number of pupils. It has gone up and up and up, and there has been no increase in outcomes. I think that there's a lot more systemic problems, and that's why they also need to free public schools from a lot of the restrictions and a lot of that. And
Cherry, number one, charter schools. Problem. Charter schools have not been the success you think they have. In many cases, charter schools are failing. And number two, if you look at the amount of money that went into schools, the increase in money that went into schools in the 1940s and 1950s and early 1960s, compared to post-Reagan, the 80s and the 90s, it has leveled off and in real dollars actually declined. Because we're not building schools anymore. And we were on a school building binge starting in 1948, 49, right up through 1968, 1970, the early and mid 70s. We were on a school building binge, and that has come to a screeching halt. We also saw teachers. It used to be, you know, in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, a single income teacher could support a family. Now a single-income teacher can no longer support a family. And, in fact, in many metropolitan areas, a single-income teacher cannot even afford a house, even a cheap apartment, in the school district in which they teach. So to say that, you know, we're spending more money, yeah, there's been inflation, costs have gone up, but that doesn't mean that we're anywhere near providing the kind of education that we were providing 20 and 30 years ago in public education.
You know, right now, less than 50% of money that is dedicated to schools goes into a classroom, including a teacher's salary, and that's because we've built up this huge bureaucracy, and there's so many people who are administrators and all this other kind of garbage that goes along with schools. And I want to hit on this real quick on this idea that charter schools aren't performing that well, because you know, first of all, I think that I think you and I would both agree that test scores are not the only measure of success. That there's
sure.
a lot of things that you don't tell. A lot of charter schools are out there, and they're focused on serving at-risk populations, on kids with special needs and disabilities. But, you know, you talk to the parents out there. I live in Washington. I've been living in Washington, D.C. for 10 years now. I consider that my hometown. And people, when the charter school lotteries come up, there are people crying because they're so thrilled to be getting into a charter school. There are waiting lists for many charter schools out there.
Right, because these are new schools.
Many
these are schools with the vitality, the new energy, the new money putting into them. Why not do that with our public schools? Let's revitalize our public school system right across the board, rather than one unique niche of it.
Well, but you know, I think there's a lot of agreement here, except that what you want to keep in place is you want to have government still dictating everything that goes on in.
I don't want private
schools.
Corporations making money off education. I consider it part of the commons.
Well, but you know, Tom, there's this big fear of I don't want a bunch of bureaucrats stealing from the public school.
I don't want corporate bureaucrats stealing from the schools.
Once again, it comes down to who do you trust? You trust the almighty government that can hold a gun to our heads and take our money, where I would rather have private individuals make decisions.
Or do you trust a corporate CEO who can put a gun to your head and have you put in prison if you try to hassle him about the way that your dollars are being spent? So, yeah, there you go.
Where is he going? He's going to jail. Thanks,
Carrie,
as always, Tom.
Carrie Lucas, IWF. Thank you, Carrie. Good talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
President Barack Obama, a new leader, a new vision, a national call to action. MSNBC follows Barack Obama from Inauguration Day through the first 100 days. Understand the challenges we face and the change he will bring. Weekdays with Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, and Joe Scarborough. The first 100 days on MSNBC, the place for politics.
Experience it and win with Tempur-Pedic. If you've been waiting for the absolute best time to try a life-changing Tempur-Pedic Swedish sleep system, this is it. Visit a participating retail store today and get your game piece for a chance to win $10,000 just for trying a Tempur-Pedic mattress. Simply call, click, or visit a participating retailer near you today to find out how. Call 1-800-433-2720 or visit Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. That's 1-800-433-2720 or Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. For official rules, go to www.experienceitandwin.com. Contest ends 3809. Offer void where prohibited.
taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
What is wrong with this man, Michael Steele?
Randy Rhodes.
First of all, he told congressional Republicans the goose egg that you laid on the president's desk was just beautiful. And then he attacked Democrats for being the obstructionist.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
And the only thing worse than stupidity is being proud of your stupidity.
3 to 6.
And the only thing worse than being proud about your stupidity is being proud and hypocritical about your stupidity.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
In the next minute, I'm going to challenge you to believe it or leave it. How? I'm going to show you how you can get a brand new top brand laptop free. Just log on to freelaptopchallenge.com. Of course, a lot of you won't believe me, and I guess unfortunately you'll forget this ad and miss out. But there are listeners who'll give it a try and log on to freelaptopchallenge.com, and yes, they will be able to get a brand new laptop free. See, thousands of people have received free laptops online, and now you can too. It all works because companies got smart. Instead of blowing their budgets on expensive TV ads, they now give away stuff online. So what are you going to do? Ignore this ad? Or log on to freelaptopchallenge.com and get yourself a top-brand, top-quality laptop for free. Even if you don't have access to a computer right now, this offer is available all day. So write this down, freelaptopchallenge.com. I'm telling you, it really is that easy. Who wouldn't want a free laptop? Go on, I challenge you. Log on to freelaptopchallenge.com and check out all the details. Freelaptopchallenge.com.
Referrals. Simple word, right? To a small business, referrals are solid gold. So how do you stir them up? Email marketing from ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get easy-to-use templates to showcase your business with photos and coupons. And best of all, it's easy for your customers to pass them along to others. In other words, help you generate the almighty referral. Plans as low as $15 a month. Get your free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com. And let the referrals begin.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your tires, your brakes, your battery, your oil and filter, your fluid levels, and your belts and hoses.
Would you check us, please?
Okay, I'm on my way to the Ford dealer now for the Works Fuel Saver Pack. You'll all get checked or tested or changed or rotated or filled.
Oh, filled is good.
For just $29.95 or less after a $10 mail-in rebate.
Woohoo! I love this guy!
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for rebate details through 331.09.
Why get your dinner from the fast food window when you can make a real meal at home? With Stouffer's, you can make a delicious meal with real ingredients and no preservatives for as little as $2 a serving. Now that's a value menu.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
That Elizabeth Warren found, actually, was that about 85% of people who file bankruptcy, middle-class people who are filing bankruptcy right now, don't tell their own kids. They don't tell their family. They don't tell their friends. They don't tell their parents. They hide it. They come up with stories like, well, we're moving across the country because we need a, we think that we've been offered a better job. Or they'll say, we're moving out of the house because, you know, we found a better house. Or we just decided to downsize. Or we decided in these environmental times that it was more important to have a smaller carbon footprint. I mean, they're coming up with all kinds of excuses rather than acknowledging bankruptcy. So there's a lot of bankruptcies going on all around us. Keep in mind, 1 in 9 houses in America is empty right now. There's a lot of bankruptcies going on all around us that we don't even know about. So anyway. This guy is dizzy, I'll tell you. Actually, there's a pair of them. These two burglars, they broke into this house And they were in the process of gathering the TVs and the stereos and stuff. And Patrick Rosario was in the basement of his home. This is in Bellevue, Washington, just up the road from us. He heard the burglars, so he sneaks out of the house, and he sees that their white van is parked out in front with the motor running, the keys in the ignition, the back door open so that when they bring out the TVs and stuff, they can make a fast getaway. He hops in the van, and he drives off and calls the police. The burglars left the television, a laptop computer, and a jewelry box by the door and took off on foot. Unfortunately, they have not yet been caught, but they got to be a little upset. I don't think it's going to take long. You got their car after all. Okay, so Carrie mentions Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren and Amelia Warren Tyagi wrote this piece for the Boston Review of Political and Literary Forum called What's Hurting the Middle Class? And they point out some really fascinating things. They start out with this myth of overspending. That there is, you know, when George Bush on April 20th, 2005 signed the bankruptcy law, that law, by the way, 8 years they've been trying, the Republicans and the conservatives have been trying to get that bill through Congress. Finally, they did. And his pitch for this thing was people are irresponsible. Senator Orrin Hatch says the millions of Americans are bankrupt or near bankrupt because they run up huge bills and then expect society to pay for them. Newsweek runs a cover story in 2001 about Americans drowning in debt. Why, says Newsweek, quote, frivolous shopping is part of the problem. Many debtors blame their woes squarely on Tommy, Ralph, Gucci, and Prada. Well, it turns out this is a lie. This is a mythology. It's a mythology that the right-wingers and the corporations and the credit card industry, the banking industry in particular, wants us to believe. But it is a lie. First of all, Elizabeth Warren points out the typical two-income family today earns nearly 75% more than their one-income parents earned a generation ago. Okay, that sounds good. But that's not because individual wage earners are earning more. That's because they're earning less, but now you have two-income families rather than one-income families. She says as recently as 1976, a married mother was more than twice as likely to stay at home with her children as to work full-time. By 2000, she was only half as likely. It gets worse with regard to debt. A generation ago, this is before Reagan, the typical family owed about 5% of its annual income in consumer debt, non-mortgage debt such as car loans and credit cards. Today, it's about a third. Spending patterns have changed. Five times as many families are filing for bankruptcy as there were in the early 1980s. Home foreclosures have tripled in the last 25 years. More than half of families with credit cards, Elizabeth Warren writes, report that they cannot afford to pay more than their minimum monthly payments. One in every three families in America with an income above $35,000 reports owing medical bills they cannot pay. What are these families, if they have 75% more than their parents did, because they have two people working, they don't have 100% more, which would be ideal, you'd think, but they're 75% more. What are they spending their money on? Well, 25% less of their money is going to clothing. It's not Tommy and Prada. 22% less of their money is going on food. It's not that they're going out and eating at the fancy restaurants. 44% of their money, they're spending less on appliances, because appliances have gotten cheaper than a generation ago. So what is it that they're spending money on? Well, they're spending a little more money on home entertainment, an average of $170 annually to get that nice TV. But that's about it. There's no epidemic of overspending. Certainly nothing, Elizabeth Warren writes, that could explain a 255% increase in the foreclosure rate, a 430% increase in the bankruptcy rolls, and a 570% increase in credit card debt. It's not frivolity. So how did Americans get into so much trouble? How did working families, where two people in the family are working, get into this disaster, this absolute disaster? It has to do with five core expenses: housing, health care, cars, school, and taxes. Five core expenses. And those five core expenses have gone up so dramatically since Reagan came into office and began his war on working people, his war on the middle class, that the American middle class is on the verge of going extinct. And if it does, if we have the conservative dream of a two-class society, you can kiss democracy goodbye, because you must have a middle class to have democracy. I'll lay out those five things right after the break, and then we'll take your call. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Okay, so here's the mythology. The mythology is that everybody has McMansions, everybody has a brand new Lexus, and this is why the middle class is in trouble. The fact of the matter is, from 1975 to today, the median owner-occupied home has grown from 5.7 rooms in 1975 to 6.1 rooms today. In other words, not even one entire room. And when a room is added, it is typically either a bedroom or a bathroom. That's it. It's not about the McMansions. What those are showing, the growth of McMansions is showing, you know, the later stages of the housing market. That's a whole completely separate thing. But when you're looking at a family with two working people, the median owner-occupied home grew from 5.7 rooms in 1975 to 6.1 at the end of the 1990s. Increase of less than half of a room. So the rich might be living in spacious new digs, but middle-class families are not. As Elizabeth Warren notes, she says over a generation, the average number of rooms in the home increased by 7%, but average mortgage expenses increased by 69%. The proportion of families who are house poor, that is, who spend more than 35% of their incomes on housing, has quadrupled in a single generation. And this is why it takes two people working just to pay the mortgage. And why the staggering increase in the cost of housing, as we discussed with Kerry, it mostly has to do with public schools. So many of our public schools, because they've been taking such a hit for the last 25 years in terms of funding, are underperforming. And so those areas, those increasingly few areas where there are high-quality public schools, where they're well-funded and they're in new buildings, housing costs go through the roof, or roof, depending on where you're from. In the early 1970s, Elizabeth Warren writes, public schools were functioning reasonably well, and a sizable majority of adults thought that public education had actually improved since they were kids. Today, it's the opposite. Fully half of all Americans are dissatisfied with America's public education system. Why? Well, we've had 28 years of Reaganomics. So here's the bottom line. The median cost of housing, while two family incomes are about 75% over what they were. In other words, people are making almost half more than they were a generation ago. Their housing costs are up 73%. In addition to that, their health care costs are up 74%. In addition to that, their automotive costs are up 52% because they have to have two cars for a two-working person family. In addition to that, their children and school costs are up 100%. And their taxes are up 25% because of inflation. They've moved into higher tax brackets. You add all this up, and what it means is that the average two-person, two-income family now only has about a quarter of their income as discretionary income, whereas a generation ago, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, until Reagan came in and started his war on the working people of America and the middle class, about half of the average middle class, single wage earner family was discretionary income that could be used for clothes, vacations, food, things like that, going to restaurants, movies, about half. So if that person lost their job and was replaced by the other spouse, and it could be, you know, man, woman, it doesn't matter. If that person lost the job and was replaced by the spouse, even at a lower pay, say they only got a 70%, you know, a job that paid 70% as well. Well, they could take that out of the discretionary income. Because they had room for that. They could take 30% of their discretionary income and just say, you know, for the next year, we're not going to buy any new clothes. And we're going to eat, everything. We're going to cook everything at home. And we're not going to go to any movies. But when only a quarter of your discretionary income or a quarter of your income is for discretionary things, then you have to decide, okay, we're going to do away with the TV. Maybe we're not going to have a telephone. You know, particularly when gas is going up and things like that. I mean, it's just the discretionary cost is wiping out family. And if one person loses a job, or if mom or dad gets sick, or if one of the kids gets sick and the person needs to provide care for them and they can't work, now that single paycheck is no longer enough to support the family, period. And that's why you see the middle class crashing and burning in America. We're going to try and get Elizabeth Warren on sometime over the next couple of weeks to talk about this in some more detail, but this is really what it's all about. It's the destruction of the middle class. And why would the Republicans want the middle class destroyed? Because when the middle class is strong and active, they demand democracy. They demand their rights. They get out there in the streets. They speak up. They become politically active. The middle class becomes politically active when they are economically healthy. When the middle class is economically terrified, they're too busy trying to work, they're too busy trying to get a job, and the conservatives say, no problem, we now can do anything we want, nobody's going to say anything, they say. So, Larry in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind?
Oh, hey, Tom, a longtime admirer. I've been having some great debates with some right-wing friends of mine, and actually have been practicing your civility. I've learned so much from you over the years. But getting into the New Deal, I get thrown this quote that Henry Morgenthau made, FDR Secretary of Treasury, in May 1939, where he said, we tried spending what – basically, he's saying it's not working. You know, all he wants to do is create jobs. Like, we haven't created jobs. We keep spending money and seeing nothing in return. I'm trying to debunk this quote. I know it's there somewhere, but
well, by 1939, the end of 1939, 1940, here's the real simple debunk. When Hoover came into office, unemployment in the United States was around 4%, 5%, you know, in the roaring 20s, 28, 20, the election 28, early 29. When
right.
Hoover left office, the Republican Hoover and a Republican Congress left office in 1933, unemployment in the United States stood at 25%, a quarter of the nation, literally, as Franklin Roosevelt said, was ill-housed, ill-clothed, ill-fed, 25% unemployment. Unemployment by the end of 1939, early 1940, was down to 10%. There's your number.
Yeah, and they keep giving me statistics of the unemployment rates not going down. So
when they give those statistics, they cite a single year, which is 1937. Because what happened
right.
was after the election of 36, the Republicans
yeah.
made some comeback, and they made some comeback in large part by saying that Roosevelt was giving away too much money, he was running up too much debt, he was doing, you know, it was terrible what the New Deal was, blah de blah. And a few people were starting to buy into that, and you had this crazy, you know, talk show host, Father Coughlin, who had started out supporting Roosevelt. In 32, he was like, Roosevelt or ruin, in the election of 32. That was his slogan. He was fully behind Roosevelt, and by 36, he was totally opposed to Roosevelt, and a third of Americans listened to this one guy, Father Coughlin, on the radio every day, a third of American adults. And so by 36, Roosevelt was getting enormous pressure to scale back the New Deal. So in 37, he did. He cut back dramatically on the programs, and immediately unemployment went back up, debt went back up, families started going into bankruptcy, the bottom fell out, and in 37 you see, and you look at a graph of this thing, you see, you know, it all falls off the edge of the earth from 29 to 33, and then from 33 to 37 it goes real steadily up, and in the 37 it drops by about 2 points. Unemployment goes back up, economic activity, GDP drops by about 2 points, unemployment goes up by about 5 points, and then in late 37, early 38, Roosevelt says, well, that was a mistake, and goes back to the New Deal policies, and by 1940, he's got unemployment back down to 10%. And so when they quote and they say, well, it didn't do any good, they always quote that one year of 1937. It is, and then you know that they are lying to you.
No, I know. That's why I try and, you know, come up with actual facts to, you know, to dispute them. But this was made in May of 1939.
Yeah, I
think speaking before Congress.
Well, Morgenthau was one of the economic royalists against whom Roosevelt was railing, and to a large extent, you could argue that there was no love lost between the two men.
Yeah, that's kind of bigger.
by 39, Roosevelt was also starting to get rather sick. And, yeah, I would say it was the war that kept him together. And, you know, he ultimately died. Yeah. I mean, you know, before the war was over and Truman had to take over. But that one quote from Morgenthau was, you know, I wouldn't put any stock in that. I mean, you know, if you want single quotes, there's thousands of them out there. You can't pin can't pin a whole thing on that.
Well, right. You know,
go ahead.
In the end, you know, they always say, oh, it wasn't the New Deal. You know, it was World War II that got us out of depression. And then, of course, I say, well, that was a huge spending package.
Yeah, it was. So, and I would say that
New
actually
it wasn't enough.
Well, in fact, I would say that World War II didn't get us out of the Depression, that we were well in the process of getting out of the Depression. Before World War II started, Roosevelt had unemployment down to 10%. It's worse than that right now if you measure it the same way. And what World War II did, in my opinion, is it slowed down the recovery. Because instead of taking hundreds of billions of dollars in today's dollars, in inflation-adjusted dollars, instead of taking hundreds of billions of dollars and billions of tons of steel and concrete and other resources and using them to build schools and bridges and things, we used them to build bombers and bombs that got dropped on.
Thrown away.
Right, which were thrown away. And so the consequence of that was slow growth in the early 1950s and the late 1940s. So I think that we would have recovered from the Great Depression much, much faster had we not entered World War II, because we wouldn't have spent just mind-boggling amounts of money fighting World War II. Instead, we could have continued the New Deal, and we could have spent that money here at home. And Harry Truman could have gotten his national health care system passed in 47, a single-payer national health care system. And we would be like the Scandinavian countries are now, doing just very fine, thank you very much, and with a good, strong social safety net. I'd say World War II really slowed us down badly. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
You know, it's not pleasant to talk about, but it's one thing that every man over the age of 30 should know about, an enlarged prostate. Prostate enlargement can cause frequent urination and even sexual problems. So between getting up in the middle of the night to urinate and possible sexual problems, an enlarged prostate becomes a giant pain in the... Well, you get the idea. Now, what if I told you there was an all-natural way to help your body keep your prostate healthy? There is. It's called Beta Prostate, and it's an all-natural prostate vitamin. No crazy medications with strange side effects, just a natural supplement that helps maintain your prostate. Beta Prostate has proven ingredients that target and feed your prostate with healthy nutrients. If you're over the age of 30, be proactive in keeping your prostate in good health. Try Beta Prostate risk-free. Call 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Your health is too important to wait, so call now, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
He's an outsider.
This is a demise of a civilization.
With an insider's perspective.
Demise of civilization? What are we talking about here?
Ron Reagan, evenings 6 to 8.
Well, no wonder Bernie Marcos is so upset.
Affording people the chance to unionize so that they could get better wages and benefits would be the death of America.
Ron Reagan, right after Randy Rhodes.
You've got to wonder about these titans of capitalism. You got to wonder what's going on in their head.
AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Is your computer running slowly? Does it take more than 3 seconds for your email to load? Are you getting pop-ups? How about spam? Well, if you're experiencing any of these symptoms, your computer and your privacy are at risk, because these are the telltale signs of a virus. It'll only get worse until you act. Get a free diagnosis at mycleanpc.com and optimize your PC.
I got the free diagnosis, and now my computer is lightning fast.
My computer never crashes anymore.
Talk about optimization. My computer isn't even this fast at work.
MyCleanPC.com will remove spyware, viruses, and virus-infected emails, all while optimizing your PC performance. It's all-in-one protection, and it's been raved about by USA Today and Computer World. The diagnosis is free. Just log on to MyCleanPC.com. Even if you have antivirus software, your computer could still be infected. Find out instantly with a free comprehensive diagnosis at MyCleanPC.com. If your computer is running slowly or you're still getting pop-ups, you need to get your free diagnosis from MyCleanPC.com. That's MyCleanPC.com.
Hello, I'm John Hodgman, author of The Areas of My Expertise.
Today I'm here to tell you about the unknown history of Powell's Books. The store was born during the written word revolution of 1895, fought beneath what is now the Willamette River. The bloody grammatical fuss claimed more than 250,000 lives, many of them fish. Then came the 1927 book massacre, when thousands of pulp novels suffered irrevocable dog ears and egregious coffee stains. But I see I'm out of time. Support Powell's, an independent bookseller with a long, colorful history. And buy my book, The Areas of My Expertise. That is all.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. Thanks to KPOJ listeners, last month, Eyes on Broadway collected dozens of pairs of eyeglasses that will be distributed in March when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru to perform eye exams. If it's been more than a year since you've had your eyes checked, call Eyes on Broadway today at 503-284-2300 to schedule an appointment. Eyes on Broadway is a proud supporter of Progressive Radio, which is just one reason why I've been a loyal patient for 8 years. Call 284-2300 or visit eyesonbroadway.com.
Gardeners, celebrate awakening from our national nightmare and help heal your little corner of the earth by planting natives. If the ground isn't frozen or too soggy, you can plant trees and shrubs all winter. I'm Callie Robson, owner of Nothing But Northwest Natives Nursery in Woodland, Washington. I have evergreen huckleberry, salal, Oregon grape, and other lovely natives that make fine gifts for gardeners and birds, too. For information, call 360-225-6440 or visit nothingbutnwnatives.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I'm Joe the Plumber, and I may be dumber than this pipe wrench that I always keep with me. I never met you, but John, I would bet you it's a good thing they don't put me on TV. 'Cause I'd ask you, ain't it tax and spending to go on with this war we got into without my ever knowing quite what for? They didn't threaten you and didn't do a thing to me. $3 trillion later, and just what would winning be?
Yes, the brilliance of Jim Tur there. Thank you very much, Jim. This is pretty amazing.
You know it's nice when the postman has a letter in a sack for you, because the mail must go through.
Steve sends me a note. He says, whenever I get into a discussion with someone who doesn't believe in evolution, this is apropos our debate on Thursday last week, he says, I congratulate them and say how nice it is that they don't have to worry about the bird flu or any influenza strain or antibiotic-resistant bacteria. When they ask why, I say, without evolution, bird flu will never mutate, so it can't infect humans. And that resistant bacteria, it can't exist because it would never adapt. They give me the old deer in headlights look and blink a few times and change the subject. Works every time. Thank you, Steve. Very interesting. Ali in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Ali, what's up?
Hello. Yes. Hi, Tom. How are you doing? I wanted to talk about the tax system during the Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes, when taxes were at 91% on the top marginal rate after you earned about $3 million a year, it would go up to 91%.
Yeah, exactly.
In today's
dollars. That's how Dwight Eisenhower was able to rebuild the infrastructure, build the freeways, the autobahns that he learned from Germany while he was during the World War II. He was in Germany. Mm-hmm. He learned about the autobahn from Germany, and he said that, you know, it's the best system to transport, and he was able to do to build their freeways. And another thing I wanted to talk about is the John Maynard Keynes that was enabled to help the economy in U.S.
Mm-hmm.
After 1933, that Franklin Roosevelt used the John Maynard Keynes economic system.
Yes.
And they should do it to give the people directly money.
That's the thing that encourages me, Ali, President Barack Obama, is that he seems to be talking a Keynesian line. even if some of his advisors and some of his aides, like or his cabinet members, for that matter, Geithner and Larry Summers, are not Keynesians, nonetheless, I think that Barack Obama is. But your point is excellent and well said. Thank you very much for the call on that. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I think that was the most interesting debate you had with that lady about education. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that you're both right, you're both wrong, but that's my opinion in another debate later.
Okay.
I'd like to comment, right, because of the time.
Yeah.
I'd like to comment that Harry Reid, mm-hmm. I'm going to give it to you straight, and I hope I'm wrong. Do you hear me? I hope I'm wrong, and I hope you're right. I think it's more than what you think it is and hope it is with Harry Reid. He looks to me like somebody that they got a lot of dirt on. He's done a lot of, in my understanding is, he's done a lot of sleazy real estate deals. He looks like a captive person. He looks totally captive since, especially, he drew that line in the sand on Iraq. And it was an absolute joke.
Thing, Armin, if that was the case, don't you think the Democrats in the Senate would know that and they wouldn't have reelected him as Senate Majority Leader?
No, because I think the structure is so corrupted that it's so deep-seated, the corruption on both sides of the aisle, that, how much are the billionaires suffering right now?
Yeah,
now that's
much.
That's the best barometer that explains how things really work.
Yeah.
That's why I think that, the Republicans, let me tell you what I think their plan is, Tom, and then you're smart enough, and there's a lot of intelligent people on your side, maybe we can counter, but here's what I think their plan's going to be. Did you see Mike Huckabee Saturday night with Nancy Skinner on there?
I did not, no.
It was very interesting, and her points were well taken, but so were Huckabee's. He said they're passing this bill, and it's almost 900 pages, and he had his people out there in the audience. You know, it was all staged, true or not, and sincere or not. And the fact is, he said, I'm going to take a break. I want you all to read the first few paragraphs, then we're going to debate it and see if you can even understand what it even says. And the point is that I think that you know it and I know it. We're handicapped. They have more media power than we have by a long shot, by at least 2 to 3. We have the internet now, but still, effectively, unfortunately, there's too many people that are too lazy that want to be fed information, that don't want to go out and search it like you do and a lot of your followers and students and people that's on your side that are intellectuals. And the fact is, they know that. And what I think they're going to do is the midterms are a little over a year away, you know, a year and some months. And what they're going to do is they're going to take the most, what all these suffering people out here will constitute as the most obscene expenditures, and they're just going to pick one out every day and rush the lobbyist that he is for the corporations. He's just going to really embellish it, and Sean Hannity's really going to, I mean, with good reason, too, because there's going to be a lot of people that's going to say, here, I'm going without health insurance. I'm going without job security. I'm
right.
Losing
and
my house.
And they're replacing the sod on the lawn of the National Mall. No, you're absolutely right, Armin. And that's what they've been doing all along. They've been cherry-picking little tiny items and saying, you know, this is what it's all about. And that's why,
that's
you know.
That's how they're going
to. Go ahead.
I'm sorry for interrupting you, but that's how they're going to plan their strategy for the midterms.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And the thing is that this is not a panacea. It's not a solve all. None of them are. And so the Republicans are going to continue to do everything they can to obstruct and destroy any effort by the Democrats to revive our economy. And then they're going to run on the campaign of, see, they didn't fix the economy. Bet on it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, the Progies, are they out or are they coming? Ed Rampell is with us. He's the L.A.-based film critic, historian, film historian, critic, and author of the book Progressive Hollywood, A People's Film History of the United States. His website, politicalfilmcritics.blogspot.com. And Ed, my old friend, welcome back to the show.
Greetings from the left coast, and we do indeed have the Progie Awards to be announced live on your show. This is breaking news, and it's also going to be posted at the Progressive Magazine's website, progressive.org.
Great. Thank you so much, Ed. So here we are. This is the so that makes us sort of the progressive Oscars, as it were, this show, this moment.
That's right. These are sort of the alternative Academy Awards, the un-Oscar, where we concentrate on the films of conscience and consciousness and the filmmakers who made them.
Then let's get right to it, Ed Rampell. Who are the winners of this year's 2009 Progies, the Progressive Film Awards?
Well, the winner of the Trumbo, which is named after the screenwriter who broke the Hollywood blacklist, Dalton Trumbo, the winner for the Best Progressive Picture is Milk.
That's a great movie.
Absolutely a great movie and a great performance by Sean Penn, who also won the John Garfield Award for Best Actor. And Sean Penn turns in a wonderful performance as Harvey Milk. And what is really great about the movie Milk is that it shows the role of the masses, of mass demonstration, of mass protests in the political process and how it impacts on it. And Sean Penn has also won another important Progie Award called the Brando, named after Marlon Brando, whom our listeners may remember was a big supporter of the American Indian movement, of the Black Panthers early on, and so on. And so Sean Penn and Milk have won at least three Progie Awards.
That's great.
And
that's
Sean
great.
Penn has won the Brando as Best Progressive Film Activist of the Year.
Now, the Karen Morley Award, the best equivalent of the Best Actress Award, named after Karen Morley, who was driven out of Hollywood in the 30s for her leftist views, as I recall.
That's right.
Although she ran for lieutenant governor on the American Labor Party ticket in 54, passed away in 2003 at the age of 93. The award named after Karen Morley, the Best Actress.
And the Best Progressive Actress, Melissa Leo for Frozen River, which is an amazing movie about so-called illegal immigrants from the Canadian border. But the film also deals with the situation of the Mohawk Indians in upstate New York, and it shows the conditions of the lower working class, the lower middle class, the people that you are always talking about in your great show, Tom, that Reagan waged war against. Right. And Frozen River is a really powerful film. And Melissa Leo edged out superstars like Angelina Jolie to win the Karen Morley Award for Best Actress in a Progressive Film.
That's great. The Renoir. This is named after Jean Renoir, who, if I'm pronouncing that right, who directed the 1937 anti-militarism masterpiece Grand Illusion. This would be the Best Anti-Film Award.
Anti-war film.
Anti-war film,
that's
excuse
right.
me. Yeah.
And this is a double winner. It's a Waltz with Bashir, which is an Israeli co-production that also won the award for Best Progressive Foreign Film, the Progie called the Gio, named after Gio Pontecorvo, who directed The Battle of Algiers. Waltz with Bashir is this really powerful, almost completely animated film that deals with the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982. But it is just an amazing movie, an amazing, amazing anti-war film. And so it won two Progies, Best Anti-War Film, Best Progressive Foreign Film.
I haven't seen that, but my co-host in the morning show, Carl Wolfson, saw it and was just raving about it. I've got to get over to see it. The is it pronounced Ziga? D-Z-I-G-A?
Yeah, Ziga, named after the Soviet documentary filmmaker, Ziga Vertov. Best Progressive Documentary, Trouble the Water, which is about Hurricane Katrina.
Ah, perfect. Okay, and the Adrian, is it Adrian or Adrian Shelley Award?
That's right, a brutally slain young actress. And this is for the best progressive film opposing violence against women. Mm-hmm. And the winner is the Clint Eastwood movie starring Angelina Jolie, Changeling.
Hmm, another one I haven't seen. But it's about violence against women, or the message of it is to sensitize us to that.
Correct, and it shows how corrupt the LAPD was much further back earlier in the century, and it's kind of sad for those of us who live in L.A. because these problems with the LAPD still continue, and I think that Clint was trying to make a comment not only on the LAPD in the 20s or 30s, but also today.
Yeah, well, it's like going back and reading Dashiell Hammett novels, you know. The La Passionera Award?
And that, of course, is named after the great heroine of the Spanish Republic. And again, this is for most progressive positive female images in a movie. Mm-hmm. And once again, it's Frozen River, which Melissa Leo won her Progy for.
That's great. And the Daily Bread Award, this is for the most positive and inspiring working class images in a movie this year.
And that's for this great movie called Battle in Seattle, which is about the 1999 anti-World Trade Organization mass strike and demos and protests. And it's a really great film with Woody Harrelson is in it, Charlize Theron, and I highly recommend Battle in Seattle.
I got to check this out. We're talking with Ed Rempel. He is the L.A.-based film historian, critic, and author of Progressive Hollywood, A People's Film History of the United States, politicalfilmcritics.blogspot.com, and, of course, progressive.org. The progies, the progressive, the sort of anti-Oscars or opposite, alternative Oscars, as it were, for progressive films. The Robeson Award, this is named for the courageous performing legend Paul Robeson. The award is for the movie that best expresses people of color in light of the historically demeaning portrayal of them in films, and it certainly has been. That movie, that award.
And that also goes to Trouble the Water, the documentary about Hurricane Katrina. Hmm. And the Thomas Gutierrez Alea Award, which is for named after a Cuban filmmaker for the best progressive movie depicting mass popular uprising or revolutionary transformation, goes to a movie that was just completely overlooked by the Academy, Che, the new biopic of the South American revolutionary Che Guevara.
Why do you think the Academy ignored it?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, Benicio del Toro, I believe he won the prize at the Cannes Film Festival.
Mm-hmm. This film has won a lot of awards.
He won the Best Actor Award, I believe. And I think it was also nominated at Cannes. I don't know. Maybe part one of Che is too hot to handle because it shows the Cuban Revolution in a totally positive light. Che is depicted as a completely heroic, courageous figure. And I don't know. Maybe
it's interesting for Americans to keep in mind that the Cuban Revolution was actually supported by Eisenhower and Nixon, the president and vice president at the time. It wasn't until after Fidel Castro got into power that, they thought he was going to come in as a small D Democrat. But anyway, let's move along. We have a little less than a minute left here, Ed Rempel. Sergei,
named after Soviet filmmaker Sergei Eisenstein. This is Best Progressive Lifetime Achievement Award, and it goes to the late Paul Newman.
That's great. The Lawson.
Best anti-fascist film goes to the movie Defiance, starring the new James Bond, Daniel Craig, as a resistance leader during World War II, leading oppressed Jews against the Nazis in guerrilla warfare.
Great. And the Modern Times Progy Award.
Now, this is the best progressive film satire named after Chaplin's masterpiece, and this is a tie. Bill Maher's Religious and John Cusack's War Inc. tied for best progressive film satire of 2008.
I have not seen Religious. I saw War Inc., and in fact, we interviewed John Cusack on this program. It was a great, great movie. Ed, people can read all the rest of these. There's still a few more. They can read them where?
You could go to progressive.org, or you could go to our politicalfilmcritics.blogspot.com. And the first live Progy event is February 23rd at the L.A. Workers Center. You can come hear myself and the People's Weekly World movie reviewer, Bill Meyer, come and talk about the Progies and the Oscars.
Thanks.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
You've heard me talking about Dr. Arthur Perry's revolutionary anti-aging serum called Night Skin. I'm truly fascinated how the main ingredients, retinol propionate, glycolic acid, and vitamin C, interact with each other to reduce fine lines and wrinkles. It even helps to eliminate unwanted dark spots. I did some research on the cosmetic medical profession and uncovered something interesting. It turns out that every person ages in their own unique way because the face is composed of several fatty tissue compartments that are affected by gravity in different ways. This is a major medical breakthrough uncovered recently, and it's changing the outlook on how doctors treat aging. Dr. Perry's Night Skin formula can be used to treat your entire face or just target troubled areas. It was specifically developed to safely tighten and tone your skin. Night Skin is convenient, affordable, and results are visible in less than a week. You can try Night Skin today risk-free by dialing 1-800-491-8335. That's 1-800-491-8335. Night Skin, the newest breakthrough in anti-aging. Call 1-800-491-8335.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evenings 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
I'm Tom Dwyer, 230-2300. I thought that Oregon got all its electricity from hydroelectric. Well, about 60% of our electricity is hydro, but the rest comes from dirty coal plants like those in nearby Boardman and Centralia. The Boardman plant, 150 miles east of Portland, generates 20% of PGE's power. It's the largest stationary source of greenhouse gases in Oregon, contributing to acid rain in the Gorge and on Mount Hood, and impacting us from Hell's Canyon to Mount Rainier. Please help me support the Bonneville Environmental Foundation in funding green power here and now with the Tom Dwyer Automotive Services Carbon Neutral Program. Use the link at tomdwyer.com, enter the promo code KPOJ, get a 50% discount, and join. Your car will be carbon neutral, you'll receive 10% off labor, and other offers that will save you over $350. If you're a current client or wanted to try us, then please check this out. I'm counting on you to help build the wind and solar power we need in Oregon today. I don't want to burn coal to power my house or my next car. Keeping our vehicles operating at their best. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 230-2300. And please visit tomdwyer.com.
We're here with Tom and Jen, who are fairly energy conscious. But it wasn't until they called us at Energy Trust that they were able to make the most of their energy use and save money doing it.
At first, we were doing just the basics, like using compact fluorescent light bulbs and water-saving shower heads.
But then our neighbor told us about the free home energy review, where an Energy Trust advisor inspects your home and recommends ways to make it more efficient. Our house was drafty and heated unevenly, so it just made sense to look into options.
We think so. We're Energy Trust of Oregon, and we help people like you lower your energy use.
After our home energy review, we made a few of the recommended home improvements, and I have to say, the air and duct sealing made a big difference. Recycling our old refrigerator and getting a more efficient clothes washer helped too.
We're saving energy and money, plus our house feels more comfortable.
Next, I think we should look at how we heat our house in the winter.
And how we cool it in the summer.
We can help you save. Learn more about energy savings and cash incentives to lower your energy costs at energytrust.org.
Why get your dinner from the fast food window when you can make a real meal at home? With Stouffer's, you can make a delicious meal with real ingredients and no preservatives for as little as $2 a serving. Now that's a value menu.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And a fine thing it is, sticking with the union. In fact, our labor segment will be coming up at the bottom of the hour. Our labor segment for the week, and as I've mentioned, I think, already today, our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, teamster.org, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. And time for our conservative alert for the day. Juan Williams. I still don't understand why NPR occasionally has this guy on as a commentator. I just don't get it. He goes on Fox News, you know, where they pay him. He's a commentator over at Fox. And he says that Michelle Obama is, and this is a verbatim quote from Juan Williams, Stokely Carmichael in a designer dress. Now, Stokely Carmichael was, you know, the guy who literally termed the phrase black power. And, you know, not that he was a bad guy anyway. I think that Stokely Carmichael in many ways was a hero, but he was a black militant in the day. And Michelle Obama is the First Lady of the United States. This is just incredible. And so NPR has asked Fox to stop when they put him on the air. You know, they put him on the air and they say, NPR employee or commentator or whatever, Juan Williams, as if, you know, he's our token liberal. And ain't so. Very, very strange stuff. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim, welcome to the show. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to say this. I noticed I wanted to focus on the point that you kind of passed over before regarding the fact that the middle class is now currently spending more money on entertainment than in the past. And one,
it's only $160 a year.
Okay, but here's my point. What I want to say is that we, and that includes myself, I believe that we in the middle class are entertaining ourselves just plain stupid. And just when the middle class should be organizing to participate, and this is the fight of our lives going on today as we speak. And instead, we're sitting our butts in front of the boob tube. Me too, I'm just as guilty. And I worked for 15 years in San Francisco, in a part of San Francisco known as the Tenderloin. It's a dangerous part of town, and the apartments are tiny and run down and overpriced to boot. And most of the people who live there were impoverished, and yet every single apartment window, every single night, shone with this blue light of a television set. And I often wonder, I still do, if all the progressive movements that made this middle class so great in America would have ever happened if the population of this country had ever had a plasma screen TV available.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean, Tom?
I absolutely do. And in fact, in Alexis de Tocqueville's book, Democracy in America, one of his last two or three chapters of the book is titled What America Has to Fear, or words to that effect. And I quoted it at length in my book, Unequal Protection, because I thought it was so prescient. He talks about how the thing that will kill democracy is a soft power that encompasses and entertains people, that doesn't coerce them, but nudges them, essentially. I don't
Did
have the exact
Tocqueville
language
said that?
In front of me. Pardon?
De Tocqueville said that?
De Tocqueville said that in 1835.
My God.
And it's absolutely spooky.
So spooky.
Yeah, and in fact, in our next segment is our labor segment, but I'm going to grab the book and I'll share a couple paragraphs or a few sentences from it with you before the show ends one way or another.
Thanks, Tom.
Because it's just remarkable. Thanks a lot for the call, Kim. I share your concern. Jeremy in Huntington, California. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, the fight of our lifetime right now, to me, is the free and open access to information. George Orwell actually said that freedom is the freedom to say 2 and 2 is 4, and if that is granted, all else follows. Well, in that light, Dianne Feinstein single-handedly tried to kill net neutrality by sneaking it in the back of a stimulus bill on the 11th, and the language was so vague, it reads, quote, shall allow for reasonable network management practices such as deterring unlawful activity, end quote. And, you know, we need to get rid of her. I mean, that scares me to death.
Well, or we need to educate her. You know, we need to let her know that we want net neutrality and, you know, hands off our Internet. But, yeah, Jeremy, I share your concern. And, I can argue for or against Dianne Feinstein, but I can certainly argue in favor of net neutrality. This, by the way, the chapter in de Tocqueville's book, this was published in 1835, was called What Sort of Despotism Democratic Nations Have to Fear. And, you know, I am quoting now from de Tocqueville. He says, above this race of men stands an immense and tutelary, that is, caregiving power, which takes upon itself alone to secure their gratification and to watch over their fate. That power is absolute, minute, regular, provident, and mild. It would be like the authority of a parent if, like that authority, its object was to prepare men for manhood, but it seeks, on the contrary, to keep them in perpetual childhood. It is well content that the people should rejoice, provided that they think of nothing but rejoicing. After thus having successfully taken each member of the community in its powerful grasp and fashioned him at will, the supreme power then extends its arm over the whole community. The will of man is not shattered, but softened, bent, and guided. Men are seldom forced by it to act, but they are constantly restrained from acting. Such a power does not destroy, but it prevents existence. It does not tyrannize, but it compresses, enervates, extinguishes, and stupefies a people until the nation is reduced to nothing better than a flock of timid and industrious animals. He says, I think men can live in, well, I'll give you the last sentence right after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Don't think I'd want your job. I can barely handle the simple one I got. Hey, Mr. President, how cool is Air Force One? Are those guys in the House and the Senate ever gonna get anything done?
And welcome back and happy President's Day.
Fathers and mothers, we're wives and husbands, and we pray that we dance at our daughters' weddings and our sons.
Yep, we're all Americans here. Anyhow, just to wrap this up from the last segment, in 1835, Alexis de Tocqueville published Democracy in America, one of the closing chapters. He closed the book with a chapter called What Sort of Despotism Democratic Nations Have to Fear. By the way, de Tocqueville, at that time, he was a French aristocrat. He was very skeptical about democracy. And but he saw as the danger for America, a nation where people had become isolated in their own homes, uninformed about the rest of humanity, and addicted to some form of entertainment that was so powerful it separated them from their fellow human beings. And here's his closing quote. He said, I think that men living in aristocracies may, strictly speaking, do without the liberty of the press. But such is not the case with those who live in democratic countries. Servitude cannot be complete if the press is free. The press is the chief democratic instrument of freedom. I would add to that a strong union movement, which was not happening during de Tocqueville's time for various reasons, but certainly has since the rise of the robber barons in the 1870s and 1880s and the progressive movements moving forward. On that, and today for our progressive segment, Christine Owens is with us. She's the executive director of the National Employment Law Project, NELP.org is their website. And Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Very glad to have you with us. More help for the unemployed in the final recovery package. Is this package really final? And B, does it do what it needs to do with regard to the unemployed?
Well,
I think this is final in the sense that this particular package is going to be signed on Tuesday in Denver. I think there's certainly more that we need to do to stimulate job growth and to make sure that jobs that are created going forward are good jobs that are, I mean, you mentioned a strong labor movement. We need more good union jobs. We need jobs that pay well, that support families, that give people opportunities to advance. But I think in terms of this particular recovery package, this is final, and it actually has some really great provisions for unemployed workers.
For example?
Beg your pardon?
For example?
Well, it does five really critical things. The first thing it does is to continue the emergency benefit, federal benefits program for workers who run out of their state benefits and still haven't been able to find jobs. So it continues that program through the end of December. And we estimate that because of that continuation, more than 3 million workers who would have run out of their state benefits and may or may not have had a federal program to fall back on now definitely will have a federal program. It also increases the average weekly benefit for everyone collecting unemployment benefits, whether they are state benefits or these federal benefits. It increases those average benefits by $25 a week, and all of that is paid for out of this federal package. It includes a provision called the Unemployment Insurance Modernization Act, which creates grants for states that update their unemployment systems in order to provide benefits to a number of workers who are not currently eligible, either because they work part-time and are looking for part-time jobs and therefore they don't meet a test of looking for full-time work, or because even though they have been working in the last 6 or 8 or 10 months, their earnings over that period haven't been enough to meet a certain income threshold for collecting benefits. So states that make changes in their unemployment insurance programs to sort of take care of these folks who fall through the cracks will be eligible to get these grants that will enable them to pay for the benefits for those workers. It suspends taxation on the first $2,400 of benefits that individuals collect. And then it provides a COBRA subsidy for unemployed workers, paying for 65% of what their premium cost would be to maintain their health insurance through COBRA. So that's a big help. It doesn't mean that everybody who's unemployed is going to be able to continue their health insurance, because even with a subsidy like that, health insurance is very expensive for folks to maintain, but it will make it possible for roughly 7 million people to maintain health insurance that they otherwise would likely have lost.
It's a good start. We're talking with
Christine
Owens, the Executive Director of the National Employment Law Project, their website, NELP.org. Christine, for the economic stimulus bill that we were just talking about, which has these provisions for unemployed folks, there was a filibuster essentially was declared by the Republicans. It was broken by three Republicans.
Right.
And I am wondering, it seems to me that when the Employee Free Choice Act reaches the floor of the Senate, those three Republicans are not going to reliably be there to break that filibuster. What are your thoughts on the politics of how this is going to play out?
On the Employee Free Choice Act?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that, Senator Spector has in the past been a supporter of the Employee Free Choice Act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the time it reaches the floor of the Senate, Al Franken will be a senator. And so what we'll need is one Republican. I would hope we'd be able to count on Senator Spector to join the Democrats in breaking a filibuster and vote on it, and have the courage to vote on it.
So any sense whether Olympia Snowe or Susan Collins have any kind of – I'm unfamiliar with their history of voting with regard
mm-hmm.
to labor.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly Senator Snowe voted on labor issues on occasion, or she's been a supporter of minimum wage increases and some trade assistance and the like. I don't really have a sense of where they may be on the Employee Free Choice Act itself. And I would say it's more likely that Senator Snowe would be a more likely supporter than Senator Collins.
What about George Voinovich? Any chance that he could come along in this?
He hasn't shown any indication that he will at this point. And, you know, I mean, I can't help but comment that Senator Brown was forced to come back from his mother's wake to break the filibuster on the stimulus package. And Senator Voinovich, the other home state senator, could have crossed over just for that purpose, so Senator Brown would not have had to come back, but he chose not to do so. So I wouldn't be terribly optimistic about him on the Employee Free Choice Act, but
good
I
point.
Don't really know.
Good point, yeah. George Voinovich is no longer even representing his own state. He's representing the Republican Party.
Right.
It certainly seems. Christine Owens, before we go, any, you know, what's the National Employment Law Project, what's at the top of your agenda? What's at the top of your calendar schedule, things that are of import that you're working on right now?
Well, I think that at the national level, we are very eager to continue moving this recovery package along, working with the Labor Department to provide the kind of direction and the support that the states need to really get their unemployment insurance programs in shape. We also really want to focus on the issue of wage theft, the refusal or the denial of employers of minimum wage and overtime pay to their workers, or misclassifying them as independent contractors in order not to pay fair wages. We think when we have a new Secretary of Labor, we have a really good chance at energizing enforcement by the Department of Labor again and really getting workers the wages that they deserve and they've earned.
Yeah, and now that Hilda Solis's nomination is out of committee, it looks like it probably will pass the Senate?
I certainly think so, yes.
Great. Christine Owens, the Executive Director of the National Employment Law Project. Christine, NELP.org for more information. Christine, thanks so much for dropping by today.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
It's been great talking with you. I truly appreciate it. And look forward to future conversations. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. John in Gig Harbor, Washington. Hey, John, thanks for holding so long. What's up? John? Maybe he held a little too long. Frank in Los Angeles. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Well, I have a couple comments. One is that we need to bring back the fairness doctrine so that Obama doesn't get hit with a stick. With all these lies, and they have to, someone can go up there and refute what they're so, you know, sanity or insanity, and Limburger say. And the other thing is, I can't believe that the revisionists have put Ronald Reagan as up at the number eighth top of the top 10 presidents. I mean,
yeah.
What are they thinking?
I know.
Oh, he had a $3 trillion deficit. There were 10 million personal bankruptcies under his administration. I think it was 1,700 savings loans went under, 1,100 banks, millions of home foreclosures. It's a repetition of what's happening today.
Yeah.
And,
it's all about appearances, Frank. You know, Ronald Reagan was a brilliant actor, and or at least a competent actor. He was brilliant acting the role of President of the United States and caused people to believe that he was actually being President of the United States and maybe being President of the United States in a way that had some value to the United States. And, you know, looking back now, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we can see that what Ronald Reagan did was he destroyed the United States, or he began the destruction of the United States, and turned us from a first world country into a third world country, began the destruction of the middle class, began insane foreign policies from Nicaragua to the Middle East. It was probably the most destructive presidency, or second to George W. Bush, of the 20th century, or of the last 100 years.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should too today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
So, what are you going to do this weekend?
Well, I've made up my list of the top-rated TVs, so now I'm going to go to all the stores and check out their prices.
You're going to go to Best Buy and Circuit City and Costco and Fry's and...
I know, it's a lot of work, but how else do I figure out the best places to buy a TV?
You could check the latest consumer ratings.
They rated stores?
Yes, they did. Stores were rated for price and selection and service and even checkout speed.
Great! Those ratings will save me a lot of time. Who won?
For buying a TV, the top-rated stores in this area were video only.
Really? Video only was rated higher than Best Buy and Circuit City?
Yep. I guess all that don't be sorry stuff is true.
At Video Only, you won't find huge stores with refrigerators or computers, but you will find the best deals on HD TVs, Blu-rays, cameras, camcorders, and home theater systems. Shop around. Just make sure you visit Video Only, because if you don't,
you'll be sorry.
In Jansen Beach, Clackamas, Beaverton, and Salem. Video only.
On the national front, National Collectors Mint is releasing to the public a limited quantity of the last surviving United States minted Morgan silver dollars. We'll give you the number for free information and a free DVD in a moment. But first, they've been called the most sought-after coins in American history, coins with a fiery past. More than 300 million Morgan silver dollars were melted down by the government during both world wars, and millions more were melted by silver profiteers in the 70s and 80s. Now, the National Collectors Mint is releasing to the public a limited quantity of original United States minted Morgan silver dollars, all in brilliant, uncirculated to fine condition. These Morgan silver dollars are hefty, rich with historical value, and packed with more than 3/4 of an ounce of gleaming silver, available now on a first-come, first-served basis. Free information and a free DVD are available to the public by calling 1-800-600-5909. Please dial carefully 1-800-600-5909. 1-800-600-5909.
Hello, I'm John Hodgman, author of The Areas of My Expertise. Today I'm here to tell you about the unknown history of Powell's Books. The store was born during the written word revolution of 1895, fought beneath what is now the Willamette River. The bloody grammatical fuss claimed more than 250,000 lives, many of them fish. Then came the 1927 book massacre, when thousands of pulp novels suffered irrevocable dog ears and egregious coffee stains. But I see I'm out of time. Support Powell's, an independent bookseller with a long, colorful history. And buy my book, The Areas of My Expertise. That is all.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Cause when I was a child with my heart in my hand, I pledged my allegiance to the flag of this land, where Kennedy was killed in a Texas cow town, and we learned how to hide from the bomb underground. So when the things that you tell me don't match what you do, I'd be a fool not to have a huge problem with you. And I'll still stand and fight for this land of the free. First we'll take back the ground that we lost in D.C. So stand and let your voice be heard. Stand and let your voice be heard. Stand up, speak out. This is still our country, so stand and let...
And if you want to stand for what's right and stand for those who have been wronged, go to DonSiegelman.com and help out Don Siegelman, help spread the word about what's going on with Governor Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, who was one of the victims of Karl Rove's criminal activities. And I just say that right straight up. And Carl, if you think I'm wrong, prove me wrong. Don Siegelman, Governor Don Siegelman, is on the air with us, on the line with us. Governor, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom. I liked your introduction. What's disturbing right now? I guess on the one hand, I want to say that things are warming up a little bit. I think Rove is beginning to feel just a tinge of heat, but when Senator Leahy talks about creating a truth commission and he's talking about giving immunity to people so they'll come in and share their experiences, and then the White House talks about cutting a deal with Rove to get him to come testify, it scares me.
Yeah, this is the guy who destroyed your life. And
among others. If all roads lead to Rove, I've said that my case is the shortest route to get there, because he has been placed at the scene of the crime by a Republican lawyer who was on the phone when they were plotting to have the Justice Department prosecute me. But Karl Rove, Tom, should not be offered any deal. He shouldn't be offered any immunity whatsoever. He just needs to be subpoenaed and brought before the committee and made to tell the truth.
His lawyer, Robert Luskin, was speaking with a reporter from Raw Story, and this story is just up, published February 16th, published Monday, today. And it says representatives of the Bush White House are no longer advising former White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove that he is protected by executive privilege. In an exchange with Raw Story, Rove's Washington, D.C. attorney Robert Luskin also said Rove won't invoke his Fifth Amendment rights to against self-incrimination when he testifies about the firing of 9 U.S. attorneys and the prosecution of Don Siegelman.
I'll believe that when I see it, Tom. He is not going to. He either is going to lie under oath, or he'll invent something to say, because I think most of us already know the truth, but we don't know the full truth. But we've got a pretty good idea of it. But there are some things that the committee plans to ask him. I am informed that. He is not going to be able to answer those questions. He'll either have to plead the fifth or run out of the room or something. But
you think he's going to show up?
I'm sorry?
Do you think he's going to show up?
I don't know what will happen on the 23rd, but I would be surprised if he shows up on the 23rd.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's buying land in Paraguay right now or some other country that does not have an extradition treaty with the United States.
But keep in mind, Rove, when he was asked to testify originally, he said, "Oh, I'll testify." And then he said, "No, I'm not going to testify." And then he said he would only testify if he was not under oath, if he got the questions in advance in writing, and if there was nobody there to take down his answers. Now, then, of course, when he was subpoenaed again, he showed he was over in Russia at the time he was supposed to appear before the committee. I just don't believe this guy is going to ever come before the committee and tell the truth.
Yeah, yeah. So what can people do? We're talking with Governor Don Siegelman. His website, just an enormous wealth of information. It's very, very important, frankly. This is one of the most important political stories of our age, of our lifetimes. And you can read all about it over at donsiegelman.com or donsiegelman.org. I-B-4-E, Don, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N.com. And what's the status of things, Governor, and where is this going?
Well, the status of my case is that it's been argued before the 11th Circuit, and maybe I should take a minute to bring your listeners up to date. But
sure, yeah, let's recap.
I think probably many of them may already know the story, but I was accused of something that the New York Times said was never considered a crime in America, and that is I appointed a contributor to a all-volunteer, non-paying board, a board on which this gentleman had served through three previous governors. The accusation was that he was appointed in exchange for a $500,000 campaign contribution to a fund which was to support an education lottery so kids could go to college.
Right, which did not even go to you. We only have a half a minute left, and this was something that Jack Abramoff was very interested in too as well. So to wrap it up.
I was handcuffed, shackled, taken to a maximum security prison. I am out. But the most important thing is that Roe goes in, so we need everyone to write and call their congressmen and senators and tell them to keep the heat on Karl Rove until he shows up and testifies.
Right, and support John Conyers in forcing him to come before Conyers' committee on the 23rd. Would you say?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, great. And you can learn all about it over at donsiegelman.com. I have that right, Governor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, donsiegelman.com, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N. Governor, thanks so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom.
I truly appreciate it. Keep up the good work. Tomorrow, Dr. Paul Cameron and I are going to be debating population, along with columnist Steve Kohler. Plus, is the world going to end in 2012? Our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.